Welcome, everybody. Namaste. Let's find our sit bones underneath us. Our spines tall and spacious. Relaxed enough so that you can breathe all the way down into your roots. Feel your belly, your breath filling your belly, filling your ribs, filling your chest. And then feel yourself emptying out as you exhale. Jaw around a little bit to loosen that up. Maybe stick your tongue out a few times. Like Kali lolling her tongue. And then let go of any thinking you've got going on between your eyebrows. Allow that to soften. I'll take a deep inhale together through the nose, exhaling through the mouth. Let's open our space with the sound of three ohms, beginning with a deep inhale. Oh, that's such a relief. Because I'm going to talk about that today. Actually, there have been several things mentioned this morning already that are really synchronous with what is really present for me today. So you'll notice that Kali is sitting here with her candle right in front of her. And the Kali energy has really been something that's supporting some of the things that have been manifesting lately for me. And I notice it's really funny that somehow the divine timing of things that show up in our life to kind of remind us that, oh, here's something that you have an opportunity for practice around, right? It just really is amazing that things show up to support that when we're ready for it. Like when there's a certain aspect of myself that it's time that I begin to address, right? A certain way of being that I'm clinging to, that it's really time to let go of, then all these little things show up in my life that say, hey, remember this? That's still there. High time you addressed it. And for me, it relates back to really my indoctrination, how I was indoctrinated as a child. of course, because that's where a lot of these things relate back to, these patterns that we've established in our lives. And I was raised in a household of comparison. Yeah? Why can't you be like that person? What will the neighbors think? <You know? laughs> This is how you should look.
I think we were in the same family.
Yeah.
Right? It could be an Americanism.
Right? Don't you want to be accepted? And so this has really instilled in me a very... I have to own it, a very competitive nature. Hmm. And I have to own that. I don't like it, you know.
Yeah.
It's not something I want to own.
I got that too.
Yeah, I don't want to own that. But it's part of me. It's how I was raised. And competition leads to jealousy and all these really icky, contracted feelings, right? Thank goodness for Ma Kali. Thank goodness for Ma Kali,
the transformer.
She is the trans. She's the aspect of the Ma that just rips the Band-Aid right off. You know? And says, look at this. Look at this. Where is this coming from? Don't you know there's enough love to go around? No need for that. No need for that. We're all uniquely divine manifestations of Source. And we all have something unique to offer, right? So, what are some of the things I'm interested in? What are some of the attachments that you guys might have?
For me, how this is manifested in myself.
Yeah.
In this family, what would so-and-so think?
Right.
Constantly. This is manifested in me always feeling inferior and not good enough. And I'm not a competitive person. Hardly at all, really. So it's like, it's always, things have kind of always rolled me over. Like, oh, geez, I'm never good enough.
Oh, that old story.
Yeah. So, that's how it comes
out. Yeah.
I'm so attached to that way of, you know, since the time I was a kid, since the time I was born.
Which
is somewhat universal.
Yeah.
It's the root mala.
You're not alone.
The feeling of separation and being unworthy and not good enough. Yeah.
I get attached to the negative thoughts that I heard over and over growing up. Yeah. And it's been quite the challenge to get through them until I'm
also
it can be very painful.
Quick addition, I should say to you, I'm always incredibly worried about what everybody thinks about me.
Yeah.
Oh. There you go.
Yeah.
All the time.
You can put that to work. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing. I think it takes courage to say that.
Yeah. It really does.
And yet, we're all there. We're right there with you. Mm-hmm. We've got the same problems.
Mine was, I think my parents and my father in particular was very insecure. And so there would be like very rigid do's and don'ts, and then a lot of fear and rejection if you didn't, the approval if you didn't do things a certain way, and mostly it was actually punishment from God. You know, that was the threat. Yeah, right. That was it. You took a risk. It was a huge risk to get that disapproval from, you know, him and God and everybody and the whole thing.
You'll be damned.
Venture. Yeah. Like, yeah. to venture outside. And then, of course, when I'm even doing this is a huge, you know, I'm rejected, ostracized by my family for practicing this form of having this kind of a practice or being something. But even though I'm just I'm so ecstatic about it. But, you know, it's not shared with any member of my family, so except my nephew, who's a chiropractor. he says if more people did this, he
wouldn't be amazing, right?
Right. So anyway, yeah. So there's fear, rejection, approval.
Mm. I'd have to say another one is for me is anger, as John knows. I'm at a stage in my life where I'm trying not to stay in self-loathing, and I'm angry because I felt cheated at my childhood and cheated at a life, and now I'm having to teach and learn from others that are not my family, and I will never receive that from my family. And I don't want to cry over it, but it's painful.
Anybody else have a burning desire?
I have several, but...
Yeah! Me and him have a similar story.
I was kind of romped with childhood at a really young age. Like, my dad was a Vietnam veteran, so he suffered post-traumatic stress. So I would go to school with, like, bruises and marks all over my body. So CPS took me, and I was raised in foster care. So at a very young age, I was romped with childhood. I cooked for myself, clean, I didn't have birthdays. And to be taken from your family and just kind of just warehouse somewhere, those guys are there for a paycheck. There wasn't love. There wasn't moral support. There wasn't affection. You need all that. Growing up as a child, you need all that. And so it's like, for me, I feel like I was robbed of a childhood. And then when I look in the mirror for years, people say that they see a nice Christian man because I was raised Catholic. And I told them what I see in the mirror is a hurt, broken, like between 6 and 8 year old child. I could see someone, you know, because I was sitting under a pool table in my own pool of blood because I was kicked through drywall, beaten to death. Ooh. And that's what I see in the mirror. But people tell me this is what they see. Mm-hmm. But when I look in the mirror, I see a lonely, hurt, broken child hiding under a pool table in his own blood. So that's something that I'm attached to, that I'm working to do.
And I'm also hearing resentment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jealousy
kind of
comes up, too. I get jealous. And it's not true. I have to tell myself everybody goes through things, but I get jealous of what everybody else has. Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So covetousness. Golly. Golly. Oh, golly. Oh, her color is black. Golly means black. And black absorbs. It subsumes all of this. She's the slayer of Rakta Bija, the Asura. Rakta is blood, Bija is seed. So he's the blood seed demon. And he's the one that when she cut off his head, every single drop of blood that fell turned into another Rakta Bija. So everything I'm hearing here, right, is that one head being chopped off and a million others springing out of it, right? All from the same source. And what is the source? What is that one head source?
Ego.
Ego. What is the core? What is the core process to be... or practice the ego has available to it to work on? What's at the core of ego when we're talking about a practice for ego?
Protection.
For me, it was like...
You almost said it.
Me? I don't know. I'm not enough.
What's the core of all this? What's the core of all this? That we're
I am
about?
The soul.
Not knowing who we
are. Fear.
Fear.
Fear. Fear is that first head.
Yeah.
That's that first form of all of this, right? And what does Kali stand for? In all her ferociousness, what does she stand for?
Protection.
What's the opposite of fear?
Love.
Love. Absolutely. Love. Love is what we're seeking through all of this. All of this, all of these things we're experiencing, right? We're experiencing out of a desire, a longing for love.
She has this terrifying, demonic aspect.
Yeah.
Until you look in her eyes.
Right.
And you have to get past that terrifying.
You have to walk through the fear.
To look in her eyes and see
yes.
that all there is there is endless.
Yes. Yes.
Endless.
And where do we find that? Where do we really find that?
Going within.
Thank you. Thank you. It's right in here. And it's so easy to say.
Yeah.
God, it's so easy to say. And I mean, and if we didn't have all this stuff that we were going through, there'd be no purpose in being here, because that's what being here is all about. We're in the fire. We're in the cauldron of transformation right here, right now. And this is all Kali. And Kali is also time, right? Kala is time. And so as children of time, we're walking through it. We're walking through that fire of transformation. And yet, whether we know it or not, we're surrounded by love. Mm-hmm. We really are surrounded by love. All we need to do is reach out. All we need to do is reach out, because it's there, because we're all going through the same thing in different forms. In different forms. And we can connect about it. And if we have the courage, Kali loves courage, if we have the courage to open up and speak our truth, then we'll find that connection. We'll find that love. We'll find the kindred spirits. We won't have to feel so alone on our path. We all have an individual path to walk. And only we can walk our path. Yeah, we can hold hands and walk together. We can be in this together. Or we can be in it separately. You know, that's our choice. Love or fear. That's the choice. Ah.
Well,
the thing about that love is, and you know this, you have to let the love take you into a life that you could never see for yourself.
Yeah.
Because you can't see that way.
Mm-hmm.
You're so blinded by fear, you can't see that way. And by all of the other things that are childhood or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the love is what brought you here.
Yeah.
The love brought you here because this touches what is real.
Yeah. And it's trust as well. And that's where Durga comes in as well. Because we have all these weapons, all this armor that we build up around ourselves in order to protect ourselves from life.
How could you know that you could ever be with us? How could you ever?
There's no way. When I was out on the streets, down and out, dirty, you know, living under the bridge. I lived under the bridge. I mean, quite a few of us probably did. You know?
Some of us are still there.
Yeah, some of us are still there. That's right. You know, there's no way I could have imagined that I'd be here.
You could not have created this if you wanted.
No. No.
Yeah.
But then you did.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah, you learned how to play that. You learned how to do this. You learned how to do all the things you learned how to do to get here.
Yeah. And also, I knew it. Inherently. It was already there. It was already there. So, the butterfly. I love the analogy of the butterfly. The caterpillar and the butterfly, right?
Yeah.
So, the caterpillar, right? It's going through its thing. It's eating its way into gluttony, you know, like we all did.
Yeah.
You know, trying to fill something, right? You know? And then finally, it eats so much that it gets this hard shell casing around it. Like we all did, you know? And then something happens. In that hard shell casing, the caterpillar dissolves. it literally dissolves into a soup. Yet somewhere in that soup are something called imaginal cells. There's only a few of them. And yet those imaginal cells are the blueprint for the beauty that is the butterfly that emerges when that hard shell casing finally cracks open. And it's a fight for that butterfly to get out of that shell. It's a fight. And it takes all the courage and all the strength that that little creature possesses to be able to come out. And yet when it does, it emerges beautiful and able to fly free. Something that caterpillar, that gluttonous little caterpillar, could never have imagined to be able to do. And that's all of us. We're all that butterfly. We're all fighting our way out of the hard shell casing. And not only that, the whole world is like that right now, especially right now. And we're all the imaginal selves, the blueprint of beauty in this primordial soup of what we call reality. So Kali is the one that's coaxing us and surrounding us with love and subsuming all of the attachments that we have, consuming it with her lolling red tongue that represents this principle of rajas, of action and passion. Yes, and she has her mala of 50 heads that represent the wisdom of the Sanskrit alphabet and the truth that comes from speaking out of our authentic nature, right? Because the Sanskrit alphabet represents all of our form. And the first vowels of that alphabet surround the throat chakra. Yeah. And her blackness absorbs all of our illusion, all of our delusion. And she dances in the cremation ground, which reminds us that we shouldn't be too attached to this form. Too attached. And yet she dances. So while we're in it, enjoy it. The same as with her lolling tongue, representing that enjoyment of life, that just active principle of just taking all that life has to offer. So Kali, well, let's sing to Kali, actually. Let's sing to Kali and Durga. Durga, who asks us to throw down all of our weapons, all of our armor. That's where we are going with the butterfly analogy when I got caught up in that. Yeah. Durga, who says, trust me. Trust in my love.
I draw spiritual principle sticks daily. Trust happened to be what I do today.
Trust is what you do today. That's awesome. So much synchronicity. It's like everything, when we're really opening to it, then everything just walks into the door to support our path. And when we're on the right path, then we see even more of that. You know, when we're truly walking in our truth, everything aligns, and there's so many little reminders that just pop up all over the place and say, yeah, that's right. Oh, yes. Thank you. You know, the billboard we just passed. Oh, my God. Direct transmission from God. Right there on the side of the bus. What
that's
do you know?
J-Ma.
Right. So we'll sing Call and Response.
Durga Devi Namah. Mahakali ki.
Jai.
Om Sri Mahadurga ki.
Jai.
Ki is like hip hip.
Jai.
Om Sri Mahamata ki.
Jai.
Jagadambe.
Jai Jagadambe. Jai Jagadambe.
Jana, I have to leave a little early.
Okay, thank you, darling.
Namaste. Thanks for the class text.
It's Wednesday, 5:30.
Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I
primary series.
Nice. Congratulations.
And obscene hour of the day.
And the buses start running at like 4:40, so I'll try.
Not all the buses.
Get here 6 o'clock.
5:30.
So 8
bus coming.
I'll run.
Run here. Right.
What bus do you take?
No,
huh? What bus do you take?
Anyone I can get to get here.
What number?
A.M.
Well,
7 a.m.
I take a mile journey. What I do is I get the E
it's not even to
my the
mind.
Denny,
it's not even
then I get on the 8
in my mind.
Oh, well, the 8 is late.
But I'm often
8.
Up at that
That's
hour.
That's the late 8.
The first bus doesn't at 8. It should become.
So I said I get to 7.
Yeah.
Where do I get
really?
That?
I don't. That's north. I'm south.
Okay, we got to focus.
I'll tell you later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bring the focus back in.
Jacket on a babe.
Kali Dorga.
All right. So, let's take a deep inhale through our nose, let it fall away through our mouth. Yes, bringing it back into the moment. So what was your experience with Kali?
I had a childhood reflection on my girlfriend was Thai, not Thai, but she was Laos. And if you say meh and mat, you pronounce it wrong. You're saying dog. And one is mom, one means mom,
mm-hmm.
one means dog, and you pronounce it wrong.
Exactly. Sanskrit's very much like that.
Right.
Yeah. If we just change
a
the inflection
bit.
Just a little bit. Ananda?
Ananda.
Ananda.
What's
up, bliss?
No.
Right.
Ananda is
oh.
misery.
Misery.
Oh. Ananda is
Ananda.
Bliss.
Oh.
See? Perfect example.
Right?
Wow.
Right. So very, very similar. Yeah. Yeah. So the energetic. I mean, when we're singing kirtan, you know, it's more about what's coming from the heart. So, you know, you can go blah, 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 and if you're singing with absolute devotion, God knows what you're talking about, you know. Because that's beyond life. Language is a very limiting thing. It's part of being informed, right? And we're informed by language, right? So that's something to think about, right? It can be a very limiting thing. However, I do have to say that the Sanskrit language in as far as my understanding goes, was designed to bridge that gap somewhat between the divine and the mundane.
With the verbal and the nonverbal.
What's that?
How about the verbal and the nonverbal? I mean,
mm-hmm.
there is sometimes a really distinct experience of those.
Exactly, because Sanskrit has that energetic vibration to it. It's designed to work with the energetic flow of our
yeah.
of our subtle body as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
so,
know, when we work with the sutras, with Patanjali sutras in the teacher training,
even
though a sutra is supposed to be unambiguous,
right?
That seems to be just not the case at all.
Right.
Sutras are so available to different translations for each individual.
Mm-hmm.
So that sutra, each of those words becomes so alive for that person,
exactly.
but very different for another person.
Because
so
it's holographic.
About that. It just begins this living thing because of the ambiguity, the many possibilities
yes.
of word, of meanings when you put it together with this word and this word and this word.
Yes, context.
So
context
everything.
Is everything.
Context
but is everything.
For that language, it's such a surprising and wonderful thing. And it, in a way, it becomes, as you embrace it, very unambiguous.
Right.
But
because it's personal.
Yes.
Because it's super personal.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. As is any of this relationship with the divine. Because when we're talking about all of these aspects of the divine, and I say this over and over, because it's so true, we're just talking about qualities that we ourselves possess. We have the potential to allow to unfold within ourselves. And so each of us has a very personal relationship with each of these archetypes of the divine that we're singing, not to, we're actually invoking in ourselves. We're invoking this in ourselves. So all of this reality is a holographic experience, right? It's very much a holographic experience that we're creating. And when we create it by invoking these different energies, we stand a much better chance of creating a world around ourselves that is conducive to our unfoldment, to the unfoldment of our highest qualities, let's say that. Does that make sense? Yeah. To the blossoming of our greatest potential.
When we experience suffering, God experiences that suffering. That's God's experience.
Exactly. We are the experience of the divine.
That we see, that's the sorrow that God sees. And we think it, and he goes, it's my sorrow. I'm the one with the fucked up life. And but it's the God, it's the divine, is the suffering.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That you
suffers.
Have to experience that.
Yeah.
Right?
God suffers through me. Without me, God can't suffer.
And it's true. Without you, God cannot suffer. And taking that even farther, how we react to that suffering is also the experience we're offering back to the divine. Right? So if I react with anger and retaliation, that's the experience I'm offering back to God.
And that itself.
It's kind of a dead end.
And that itself.
Yeah, it's a dead end. Right.
Cycle of insanity.
Right. And so I build and reinforce that asura. That the sura is the divine, right? The asura is what blocks the divine. It's what blocks source. So I reinforce the... I don't like to use the word demon because it's really two sides of the same coin. Right? It's what's blocking source and what's source.
In such a way that I couldn't possibly be demonic.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't be that. I couldn't be like a dog. It couldn't be a beast. We just can't imagine that we actually are like that, you see?
Right.
No.
We have those qualities.
We do. We have that primitive part of ourselves.
We don't really
we
want to
see ourselves
that.
From another point of view, and we really understand that demonic quality is so sacred.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, I have no path.
That's right.
Without that demonic quality, I have no path.
Right.
Because I really haven't.
So the word demon is so it's just so maligned. It's got
you know,
such a connotation to it of being of Satan and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't like to use the word because the word is limiting.
And it's from a perspective that judges and castrates
yeah.
the demonic.
Right.
And doesn't see them at all.
Right.
You know, it's so it lies about their very nature of what is demonic. Is so deceived about
in the churning of the Milky Ocean, which is exactly what all of our experience is, we're churning this Milky Ocean, right? The suras, the divine, and the asuras work together in order to churn
asura
this stick.
Holds onto that shit.
Right. They're the ones that hold it down, right?
Yeah,
you gotta make a whirlpool.
Right. You gotta make a whirlpool. Actually, no, they're the ones at the head of the snake.
Well, somebody's got to hold it down.
Right.
I don't know who it is, but
they're the ones at the head of the snake just getting the poison spewed all over them, is what it is. Yeah. And
this burns so
and
good.
So we have to have these experiences of suffering in order to know the experience of joy. It's just got to be. Because we live in this illusion of duality. Right? And that's the path we're on. This is what we're here for. We're here to experience this. And so it's going to happen. We're going to suffer. We're going to suffer. That's just, it's a fact of life. We're going to suffer. And, you know, and when we're in jail, right, pretty much one of the biggest things that can happen is for somebody to sit in that seat that is mine Oh my God. And that can cause the most incredible ruckus. Right?
You mean someone providing a mirror?
Right? Right? It can cause the most incredible ruckus because we absolutely are so attached to suffering. We're attached to conflict. Right? That we create it when there's really not a lot of conditions for it to be there, but we create it. Right? And we hang on to it for dear life. And why is that? Why do we do that?
Distraction.
It's distraction, yes.
I think it's projection, but what's it called when something happened to me? You remind me of myself. Now I'm going to project my anger and my hurt on you. I'm going to hurt you, cause you suffering, because you're reminding me of myself.
Right, right.
So now I'm going to...
It's projecting that.
Projecting
yeah.
onto you now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Instead of dealing with it now, well, it's your fault. I'm angry.
I also call it, though, misplaced anger.
Yeah.
Because just the other day, I was walking down the street catching a bus, and I just saw this girl just anger yelling at, I'm guessing, her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I see that actually a lot, you know, and all my thought was, her anger has nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And usually that's what I end up doing to myself. My anger has nothing to do with him.
Right.
You know?
I was crossing the light right here. And there was this big, huge truck in the left lane that needed to be in the left lane in order to turn right because he was so big, right? And there were people going across the crosswalk. And I was behind the truck, and I'm like, you know what? He's not going to be able to turn until those people cross the crosswalk, right? So I pulled into the right lane and went ahead and started to go by him. And he started yelling at me, like rolled his window down and was just like calling me all kinds of really bad names. You know, and I'm like, okay, that's not about me.
Well, he's having a bad day.
He's having a really bad day, so I'm just going to let that go. However, I could have attached to it.
Oh, I've done it many times.
And I could have taken that and I could have personalized it, right, very easily. And so that's where Dorga comes in. She really comes in there. It's like, hey, trust. Trust that... You don't need to put your defenses. We don't need to put up our defenses. We can walk through this world wide open and take in all of the experience of the world. Take it in fully. Experience that suffering. Experience whatever we're going through completely. And then trust that we can let it go. We can let it go. It might take a little while to let it go. Especially if it's something that really hurts, really bad. Yeah. But we can let it go. And it will be held. And it will be contained. It will be received by something much greater. That is just the pure love that the Ma, the divine creation, is. And that's Dorga in all her glory. So let's go ahead and sing this last one. We'll also sing a couple other names too, Lakshmi and Sarasvati. Both of these chants I learned from my teacher Gina, from Gina Salah. So thanks to her for helping to bring this into my life. Alright, so we'll sing Dorga Dorga Mahamata. Can you say that? Dorga Dorga.
Dorga Dorga,
Dorga Mahamata.
Yes. And Namo Dorgaye.
Namo
Dorgaye.
Namo Namaha.
Namo Namaha.
Yes. And then we'll sing Dorga a bunch of times and Jaya, which means victory, a bunch of times. And then we'll also sing the Kali. Yeah. And Kalike is what we'll sing when we sing Namo. Namo Kalike.
Okay.
And we'll sing to Lakshmi. And Lakshmiye. Can you say that?
Lakshmiye.
Yes. When we sing Namo. And because Sarasvati, can you say Sarasvati?
Sarasvati?
Sarasvati.
Yeah. Because Sarasvati has so many syllables to her name, we'll sing Jai Sarasvati instead of Namo Sarasvati. Because it just wouldn't fit. And so Lakshmi is that energy of nourishment and nurturing and abundance and beauty and all the things that sustain us. And Sarasvati is the energy of creativity and creation and learning and all of those things that bring our world into being, and how we communicate with one another as well. Because how we communicate also is how we create our reality. Yeah. And Durga and Kali really encompass all of this. They're transformation, and so transformation encompasses what sustains us and what we create. Right? It's all this cycle, this continuous cycle that is the movement of our experience in this natural world, this world of nature. All right, so we'll sing call and response again.
Durga, Durga, Mahamata, Namo Durga, Ye Namo Nama. Durga, Durga, Mahamata, Namo Durga, Ye Namo Nama. Durga.
tears as you would a little child. It's okay. You fell down again, you hurt yourself. It's okay. Everything will be alright. Because this life is truly simply a path we're walking through. We're not running out of time. We're running into time. Head first. We run into time like a child running into the playground. Full of curiosity, full of wonder. Into the wall. And that's okay. Because eventually we find our way into the center and back to source. So sending all this loving energy out into the world with the chant, Loka.
Thank you.
Thank you.